have to go out and fight for things that are falling apart while we fight for them, and also fight over them. The rules and laws of living are very important. Sometime in the golden age to come, there will be a world code of life. There will be a way of life that is commonly agreed upon by all. And when that day comes, whole groups of people that now are miscellaneously believing will be on their knees giving thanks. But when the child coming into the world in that time comes here and receives the good things of life, is given the strength and wisdom and insight to become a constructive citizen, when all these problems of poverty, congestion, and all kinds of stress are gradually fade away, we will find that the earth is a very good place, and that it also has its own rules. The earth has laws. The birds and the bugs and the trees have laws. Everything in nature is lawful except man, and he is out trying to destroy laws. This is something he cannot do. The laws that he tries to destroy will cripple him. And in the long run of things, he must bow to them, as he has always had to since the dawn of time. Back in among the Greeks and peoples of that type, there was a realization of something that we might need yet too. The Greeks were perfectly aware of fact. All the peoples of the world were not going to agree with them on their beliefs. So they established institutions, which they called the mysteries. And these were for the purpose of preserving the integrities of leadership. Now, we have higher universities and all kinds of places to teach people to work in seven special deals of one kind or another. The Greeks did it, and the Romans tried to do it, but their morality and ethics broke down. But the Greeks did do fairly well with it. If you wish to be a Greek citizen, if you wish to really amount to something in Greece, you didn't go to just the school. You found yourself a teacher, like Socrates, or Aristotle, or Plato. And you became his disciple for 10, 20 years, as Alcibiades did. And you become a philosopher like your master. And when people wanted help, they came to the philosopher. They came to the individual who had studied these matters. From the philosophers of Greece were selected those who were to serve the various temples, creating what were called the mysteries. The esoteric teachings, the secret doctrines of antiquity, were in the keeping of these mystics in the temples and shrines of the faith. You had to go in and you had to graduate. You had to guarantee to be honorable. If you did not, you were not permitted to enter. Supposing you wish to be an acorn, that is, a man of the ruling group of Athens, and you had your proper credentials from a teacher, then you went to the temple and you presented your petition. You felt you wished to be an archon or a leader of the people. Then the master of the mysteries, the old priest, would say, "All right, now you take your oaths and your experience. Show that you can suffer for principle. Show that you can go through temptation without faltering for a moment to protect the common good. And prove beyond all question of doubt that you're incorruptible. Because if you take these obligations and you are then corrupted, you're very liable to disappear and not be seen again. Those who break the oaths of integrity are not forgiven easily. Those who make mistakes but have no obligations are children. We will try to help them. But when you know better and you do badly, then comes punishment. The punishment that was given and accorded to the first great philosophers for the gods of antiquity. Therefore, if you wish to become a leader of the people, a judge, a legislator, you take the oath of integrity. You put death before dishonor. You prove conclusively that you're incorruptible for money, that you will never end up fall for any fame, that under, no matter what happens, you will give even justice to the rich and the poor, and will in all matters fulfill the teachings that you have received of idealism, integrity, and divine worship." Well, with that kind of system, the Greeks got along pretty well until the Romans conquered them. Now, why did the Romans conquer them? The Romans conquered them for the very same reason that modern materialism is conquering us. They wanted to remove the barriers that would prevent personal selfishness. They wanted to make sure that you could be rich, break all the rules, and enjoy the good life. Well, the Greeks said no. If you tried that, they can take you out and either imprison you, or you would disappear into the subterranean passageways of the temple, and no one would know what happened to you. But in all matters, if you kept the obligations, you then became a faithful servant of your people. In Sparta, the same thing was true. Sparta was a very simple, but a very courageous little state that survived on the principle that it would permit no corruption. The Spartan lived by a code, and he chose to die by it rather than corrupt it. His integrities, his values of right and wrong were severe, but they were just. And as a result of that, Sparta continued for a long time to be a model of an economic integrity. All these things have been tried and done. And in most cases, the great ones of the past have gone on until the world around them has become so powerful in its corruptions that it obscured them. And it did it by means of national barriers. When the Romans became stronger than the Greeks could not control them. When modern man and all these nations become stronger than the integrities of our lives, we cannot control them. So the mass of corruption destroys the control of the small group of dedicated persons. But that small dedicated group can go on. Go on as the early Christians went on in Rome. They were persecuted and martyred in every way, but they lived because they were sustained by one solid conviction that what they were doing was necessary. Everywhere, virtue survives, but in small groups. The time for it now is to come out of its shelter, to come out of its hiding place, and to be encouraged to lead people along the way of integrities. It is very necessary that within the next 25 or 50 years, we find out how foolish we've been. And if we don't have to go and take a big course on it, all you've got to do is read the daily paper, and you will see just exactly what we're doing that should never be done, and what we are not doing that should have been done already. All these things will help us to gradually realize that the bad examples that we see are the basis of instruction. If these people were not making these foolish mistakes, we probably would never notice it. But once we see how foolish they are, we realize that when we do the same thing, we are equally foolish. And this is the beginning of a better way of life. So we take the stress of life and take a little of the stress out of it. We can make our own lives probably 90% stress-free, even under the most difficult situations. We can do it because if we have no false ideas, we have very few conflicts. There is no one that can really tell us that we can't be honest. And if we don't ask anybody else, we're all right. Because if we are honest and do as we should, we know if that is right, and there's no stress in us. And if we quietly go along, do the things that need doing, and in every way try to protect the integrities of life, educate our children properly, make certain that the various responsibilities of life are met, and wherever a ballot comes up, vote for that which is the best. Do the best we can, get a little better all the time, and in a little while, it'll show. And the thing that'll make it show is something like has happened in the last two or three days, namely that the problems are beyond control. It's absolutely impossible to imagine a great world as we know it being in such a sick condition that it can't even tell where to go tomorrow, that it knows not what to do next, and all these governments with all these wealth are out spending money and getting nothing for it. All this is very important. The only place where money was valuable, according to the Greeks, was in the collection box of the temple, where it could be used to take care of the feeding of the poor. So we have all kinds of possibilities of things that need to be done. And the stress of our present unpleasantness will gradually get a little bigger. We will find this nation has to now go to earth and take care of some other country that is in worse trouble. And little by little, these things spread like a plague. And with all the wisdom we have, with all the education we claim, with all the wonderful rules and laws, the advantages and opportunities of life, we can't seem to take care of the selfishness and cupidity of human nature. So I would suspect strongly that at the root of life, far beyond the visible manifestations we know, there is a divine law, a divine plan, a divine purpose that was put into this creation when it was fashioned. After all, we didn't fashion it. It didn't come from nothing. It had to come from something. And when it came, it became beautiful. And it was magnificent until we gradually deformed it. But whatever it may be, it's there. And that great pattern of principles is still ready to work for us. And the only way we can have to have the law keep us is that we have got to keep the law. And we've got to realize that a great principle of good, immutable, irrefutable, eternal, lies at the root of existence. Behind all the worlds and planets and galaxies is an infinite life principle. And this life principle has within it the substance of virtue. And that which is virtuous with the life principle goes on, which is contrary to it, is cast off. And we know that somewhere there was a wisdom that created existence, not just our little planet. And if there's something big enough to create existence, it is worthy of our respect. And it is up to us to try to find out how that law would like us to act in the emergencies we face today. This is part of a good philosophy and a good ethics. An education should be devoted to preparing the individual to find the realities of life in which he lives, to discover how to be a good and proper citizen in a good and proper universe. We are all citizens of one state. We are all peoples of one nation. We are all children of one truth. We might as well get started at it and end this mess that we're working ourselves into in the last 1,500 years. It has become critically bad. We cannot continue this way. And the only way to get out of it is each individual to get himself out of it. And if he gets himself out of it and straightens out his own life, he will then at least have less stress and be able to cooperate with others when he recognizes that their purposes and their projects are similar to his own. This is a time now when it comes for every good man not to come to the aid of his body, but for every good man and woman to come to the aid of the universal principle which is necessary for our life and survival.